It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't, out into the new world of new technologies. With your personal guide, the Pilgrim on the 405, here he is, Mr. Will Crist.
Well, welcome to the Pilgrim Talks on this little bit cloudy day here in Laguna Beach. Been a lot of things going on in the past week or so, and especially on the entrepreneurial front. Last week we spent some time with the people from Boxador. We heard from the founder of Setster, and we heard from the founder of Brand Bucket. Lots of interesting things happening when people get creative. And I've been getting telephone calls from other folks saying that they know entrepreneurs who are very creative and innovative. And one of those we have on the show today, I want to introduce you to a fellow who's been a commercial real estate expert for 11 years and began his whole career in real estate just about the time that the dot-com boom was at its height. And so he sees the world a little bit differently from the way that some of those old commercial real estate brokers see it today, who are maybe just now getting on LinkedIn. So I want to bring on to the show and talk a little bit about what he's doing, Andrew Bermudez, co-founder of RateBlend. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me on your show, Will. Really appreciate it. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, that's tremendous. Tell us a little bit about your background, Andrew.
So I started in commercial real estate back in 2000. I was brought on board to a company called Lee & Associates, and I was trained by a tenant representation broker. I remember that a few weeks ago you had Dave Kenny from Madison Street Partners on your show. So he only represents tenants. That's how I started my career, just representing tenants and buyers, by a gentleman of the name of Randy Mason. And it was a really exciting time back then. We used to lease, you know, there just wasn't a lack of deals. There was abundance everywhere until things got really ugly and you were no longer leasing 30,000 feet to a tenant, but you were actually trying to either kick him out of the building or you were trying to sublease your space, but they were burning through funding pretty quickly, so that made it really hard to try to get a tenant to sublease from somebody who might go kaput within a couple of weeks. Quickly after that, you know, we saw the influx of the real estate boom, and we saw that come and go. So we've had in our industry over the past decade to get creative and then get creative again, and it's this time around it's been much tougher than it was when the dot-coms imploded. The one thing though is that I've been doing is over the years I not only help tenants and buyers, but I've been also helping investors and property owners to sell or lease their buildings. So that's in a nutshell what my background is in this industry, and I primarily focus in Orange County.
All right, so tell us a little bit about what this whole social media internet, does that mean to you as a commercial real estate broker?
You know, that's an interesting question because I'm probably one of the most connected guys in the social media space. It makes sense to me. And that's a question that I get from my fellow brokers in my company or in outside companies. I was talking to a gentleman from my company, one of my other regional offices, last Friday, and we were both talking about this social media and broadcast communication type technology that we've got. For me, what social media, I think it's a fantastic tool in the sense that before you and I, let's go back 10 years, we go into our Outlook or what was then just the beginning roots of Salesforce.com, and we go through our address book, and if we wanted to send out an announcement to, let's say, all of our friends, we would have to open up an email pane, and we'd have to, you know, copy and paste each one of their email addresses and, you know, carefully craft the email. It could be 3 pages long or it could be 3 sentences long, and then hit send. What social media allows us to do is allows us to remove that friction in trying to get a message across the internet to whoever wants to find that information. So let's say I'm not friends with you, but I'm talking about this topic of commercial real estate and technology, and you type into Twitter technology and real estate, and most likely one of the messages I broadcasted or somebody else who has an affinity for this space has broadcast, you'll be able to find that information and consume it. And that's powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. So what has that meant to you in terms of developing your business?
You know what? It's interesting because I think that in my business, in commercial real estate and real estate as a whole, we always see residential real estate brokers adopt these technologies very quickly and be able to embrace them. Commercial real estate hasn't been as fast to adopt these technologies, but we're getting there. For the people who use them very well, there's a gentleman, for example, a broker from out of state. His name is Duke Long. He uses it very, very well. People know him. But landlords today, if you don't have a social media strategy, or you're not on LinkedIn, or you're not on Twitter, or you're not on Facebook, or you don't bring it up during a presentation, most likely you won't get the business. They don't understand it. They know that they have to be present in there.
Yeah, I find that true of a number of people. I got an email today from a fellow who's a sales manager in a business here in Orange County. He wrote me and said, I noticed that your name came up on LinkedIn. I'm just getting started on LinkedIn. I'd love to talk to you about how you use it. That's an interesting conversation coming up.
It is, especially when, I mean, I know that you do a lot of sales training and advisory work and consulting work. And I think that LinkedIn is one of the most powerful tools out there for sales. And I think the staffing industry has done a great job, especially recruiters, at using that tool to its maximum extent. And they get very creative with it.
So how does that – what does that mean for you in commercial real estate?
Well, you know what? I had this conversation last week. It's like, for example, let's say I want to know – what we're used to, old school sales, for example, has to do with all right, you cold call, you get the CEO or the CFO or the facilities manager on the phone, and then you finally get a little bit of information which will sort of guide the next 6 months to a year to your future activities with that prospect, whether, hey, we're not interested or we've got a national account that won't expire for the next 10 years, or, hey, sorry, we're not interested, but you've persisted and you've invested time and energy and resources with limited information. With LinkedIn, what I can do is I can look at that company, I can type in the name of the company in LinkedIn, and I can see who in my network has some connection to that company. Let's say, you know, John Doe knows ABC Corporation, and I can call John and say, hey, what do you know about this company? Or maybe he's a CEO, or maybe he's best friends with the CEO, and he can do a warm call or an email introduction, something like that. And that saves you not only a ton of time, but allows you to collect the information that you need for a sales call.
Well, another tool like that is called People Maps. You familiar with People Maps?
I'm not. Educate me, please.
Well, People Maps is a technology that will take the names in your CRM and connect them, waiting for you to say, well, show me. I want to talk to Andrew Bermudez. Show me a way to do that, and it will pull together everything on the internet that would connect me to you.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it would, if I had a company, I could type in the company, and it would show me connections, and it will show me, a range of connections. It could be 300 different ways of getting to you. Uh-huh. Some of them stronger than others.
I'm going to have to look into this. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
People Maps, right?
People Maps.
Okay.
People Maps.
Just wrote that down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fascinating way to see. And now, LinkedIn can take a little time to do that, but People Maps will just pull it all together for you.
But you're using so it sounds like what you're doing. So LinkedIn, for example, if I start a LinkedIn account today, I most likely don't have any connections because I don't have the time to have collected those connections or build that network.
Right.
So what you're saying is it's kind of a hybrid of those models where I can walk in, dump my database or connect with my database, my CRM, and it will basically create a picture for me that will help me leverage the context that I've already built in and out in my CRM system.
Right.
Well, that's fantastic. I think that's a phenomenal tool. Well,
yeah, and not only will it take what's in your it doesn't take just what's in your CRM. It takes what's in your CRM to start with, and then it pulls in everything that's connected. You know how on LinkedIn it'll say you have these three connections that connect you to this big empty space, which connects you to three people and then the person you're looking for.
Right.
Well, PeopleMap will pull in all of that in between.
Oh, that's great. That's powerful.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So that's a thing to look at, especially, you know, because it's all about connections today.
It's about relationships at the end of the day. It's a relationship you've got with your computer. It might not be beneficial. It's a relationship you've got with your boss.
Yeah.
It's a relationship you've got with your client, your prospect, or a potential client. Or what relationship you've got with the eyeballs that don't know you intimately, but, you know about you. And that's it's very important to be able to build upon those tools.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so tell me a little bit about we want to talk about rate blend and what that means, but how did you get started in something other than commercial real estate? What did that mean to you?
That's an interesting question because, you know, it's scary when you go from broker, from resident, from commercial real estate, and you see the world as, you know, you see the world as real estate, as office space, as transactional, and you sort of have to relearn your experiences in your life. Certain principles apply, but some don't. Like, I wasn't designed to put software together, and that's really what I was putting together. But I knew I had a compelling problem that I needed to solve for myself, and I knew in asking enough people that if I was trying to solve it for myself, that there's many souls out there going through the same problem. So I thought it'd be a fun experiment to get out of my comfort zone, learn a little bit more about, you know, what I was doing with a lot of my clients are technology entrepreneurs. They're either investors in technology companies and angel investors, they're either venture capitalists. So that was a little bit of an advantage that I had is, you know, over drinks or on a weekend trip or on a bike ride, I could, you know, ask for advice, which is definitely something that I believe in is, you know, having mentors. You need mentors because otherwise the road to get to where you are becomes really, really long. And by the time you get there, somebody might have already won that race and now you've got to shift gears. So it can be very costly to not have mentors, but it can be extremely advantageous to have them. So I would suggest that everybody get a mentor. And I've had a few. One of the individuals that, you know, mentored me towards the beginning was Frank Peters from the Frank Peters Show. So he's been a successful technology entrepreneur. And when I was going on this on building RateBlend, you know, he used to be an engineer. Then he had to switch hats and he had to become, you know, the leader of his own company that he was building. And then he had a successful exit to SunGard. He used to make software for Wall Street. The only difference is I was making software as a service for commercial real estate. To go back to what it was like, so I asked a lot of my friends and a lot of my contacts in the space about what I needed to do, gathered enough information where I felt comfortable with it, went out and figured out how it is that we put software together. Luckily, I had a good friend of mine who had who in his previous employment was one of the guys that helped build and scale MySpace. So he gave me a lot of information about wireframing, you know, putting what they call user stories and building the interaction and really, you know, working on building blueprints and building the experience before you have the programmers actually swing hammers, meaning actually coding this stuff. And to me, that was fascinating. And keep in mind, I'm a salesperson at heart and I'm a real estate guy at heart. So for me to get out of my comfort zone and do a lot of this hyper analytical, really extraneous thinking and, you know, looking at things from different dimensions was hard. was really hard, but it was extremely rewarding because you quickly found out what wasn't going to work, what would work, and what you could polish to make the experience better. And I think because of the time that I took to invest in that social learning experience, that Rateland is a success it is today. We've got, you know, some impressive users. In fact, you know, I'm with Lean Associates, and, you know, people at Lean Associates, people in my own office use the tool, and they didn't even know that I built it. The second major landlord in Orange County, one of the big landlords that's visible out here is called Olin Properties. They use the tool. Other companies like UGL Equus, these are Cassidy Turley, Grubb and Ellis, I'm trying to think other names, CBRE. These are big companies using Rateland. So it goes to prove that if you take the time and effort to solve a problem and solve it really, really well for somebody, you might have given them a gift and something that really just leverages the time of productivity.
So tell us a little bit about what Rateblend does, and then I want to come back to how you got there.
Okay. So what Rateblend does, in a nutshell, is it replaces your Excel office spreadsheet to calculate effective rents. What happens is it takes too long to compute effective rents. You're on the phone with somebody, you got to hang up and tell them you'll call them back. Or you constantly have to program and reprogram your spreadsheet for different scenarios. So you never have one place where you can go fill in the hole or fill in the blanks and get your answer and move on with your life into closing a deal. You've got this little momentary experience where you're going to spend between 10 to 15 minutes trying to put together an effective rent sheet. And then when you put it together, you got to spend another 10 to 15 minutes writing an email explaining what the hell your spreadsheet means. You know, pardon my French, but really that's what happens. You know, you spend a good amount of time doing some sophisticated calculations that are at the end of the day pretty simple and systematic. But then you spend another 15 minutes trying to explain to the recipient, who is most of the time not in your field because it's either a tenant or somebody who just happens to be, you know, in the market for office space, but the information is useful to them. So you have to try to educate over an email. And what ends up happening when you try to explain those calculations to the recipient, they end up picking up the phone and spending 20 minutes with you on the phone trying to, you know, decipher what the spreadsheet means, what your email means, and then to verbally, you know, understand it and get a comfort level with it. What Rateblend does is it gives you an online web page that says, what's the address of your building? What's the name of the client this is addressed to? How big is the space? How many months is the first rent period? What's the rental amount? Is it monthly? Is it monthly per square foot per month? Is it yearly? Is it yearly per square foot? And then is there any free rent? Are there any commissions? All in one line. And then you can add a period. And if you have rental increases, like some landlords will negotiate a what they call a bump in rent every year. Sometimes it's 4%, sometimes it's 5 cents a square foot. You're able to enter that, and every time that you add a rent period, it calculates it for you. So it's very automated. So you go in there, fill in the blanks, you can add concessions, you can add commissions, you can do that, and everything's calculating straight in the browser in real time. So you can actually be on the phone with a landlord, an investor, or a tenant, and quickly run down scenarios in real time without having your spreadsheet slow you down.
Earlier life, I was in commercial real estate on the East Coast in Massachusetts and New England. And all of those blending, those lease blends, they were very complicated.
You know what's funny? It's they're not complicated because, I mean, if you really boil down what we're doing at the end of the day, you're saying, okay, let's say you're renting a space for X amount of dollars, and it's a five-year lease, and the rent turns out to be for the entire term is $500,000, or let's call it $1 million. And then you're getting, all in all, you're getting, let's say, $100,000 in free rent, and you're getting $100,000 in tenant improvements. Well, your effective rent essentially is $800,000.
Yeah.
It's not complicated. The problem is we have ineffective tools to use it, and we always think that the spreadsheet is our ultimate messiah. It can be. It can be when we've got subjective scenarios, but when we've got effective rents, where we know the computation every time, we should have a tool where we can just go ahead and plug in numbers into blanks and get a result, because we know it's always going to be the same thing. We know the formula. We just need something that – we just need some rails that keeps our train on track.
Yeah.
Then we can move on to closing a deal, to interacting with clients, to prospecting. I mean, you know very well, I mean, because you do a lot of coaching on the sales side, that time is everything. The more a salesperson can be in front of a client closing business or cross-selling or in front of a prospect, the higher the profitability of the company or the profitability in that person's time. And I build tools that create more time for landlords, for property managers, for leasing agents, and for the brokers.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you've created – what you did was you had a problem and you begin to make the assumption, or you discovered that this is a problem that other brokers share. Correct?
Yeah. I saw it beyond the brokers, because I knew that – a lot of landlords and property managers and asset managers too. So the whole chain of the real estate transaction was running the same spreadsheet problems before they gave each other an answer, a yes or a no.
Mm-hmm.
So the broker would do his calculation, communicate with the landlord, then the landlord would run scenarios in their office and then talk back to the broker and say yes or no. And then the broker would do that, and then the final decision maker would run his or her numbers and then say yes or no. So I understood that, you know, for every person that was out there will be multiple individuals. And then before I started building it, I talked to a few people to see if they had a problem with the spreadsheets. And the funny thing was, some people said, you know what, no, because I can manipulate my spreadsheet. But as the market started to get softer and softer and softer, where they had to use tools to convince tenants or show tenants that they were getting a great deal, that the free rent and the concessions they were getting and the move-in allowances were actually lowering the rent, and their spreadsheets weren't working, they were spending more time trying to educate the tenants or educating the landlord of what the actual financial picture was at the end of the day, and that the rents were lower and that the lease terms were lower, where it just didn't make sense. You just needed faster tools to get you there faster. So I knew there would be a value in creating a tool that helped people get from point A to point Z much faster in a safe way.
Well, all right. So you have the problem and you have the solution. You've discovered that this problem is one that's shared by many other people. What did you do next?
Talk to people, because you have a problem doesn't mean that that you're necessarily doing something. If somebody told me this before, if somebody hasn't messed around with this problem, try to solve it before, there's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I started talking to a lot of people and said, hey, look, do you think these things slow you down? Do you find value in something like this? And then when they said yes, and then I showed them this prototype, which had, you know, we've been running in a shoestring to build the app. They saw it and they started messing around with it, and they fell in love with it. Uh-huh. And then they started giving us feedback on what they like to see and how to streamline the experience. And, you know, I think that was my gut check, where we should probably spend a little bit more time and energy really refining the product.
Okay. So we did a little market research to find out if anybody solved it before.
Right.
All right. So I want to follow this line all the way down to getting the product out into the marketplace. But before I do that, I want to take a little break and hear from our friends at Sandler Training. We'll be right back.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.svnonline.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Crandall with Sandler Training, here to talk to you about Sandler Rule number 3, no mutual mystification. So what does it mean? Well, let me ask, have you ever entered into a sales call with an expectation that it was going to end one way, and then to find out that it did not end that way, but another way, bad or good? Or have you ever been in a meeting with an expectation of what was going to transpire, only to find out that that isn't actually what transpired? Both of those are examples of where there was mutual mystification. In general, you can think of mutual mystification as any time when two parties have different expectations and don't take the time to clarify them in advance of the interaction. It's our job as sales professionals to be intentional about finding out what expectations people have, to define phrases and terms in advance that might be misunderstood, to tie up any loose ends, also to make sure that all parties are in sync with what has happened as well as what will happen. I like to say this is summed up by one of my favorite phrases. The source of all the world's frustration is unfulfilled expectation.
And now back to Will and his guest.
Well, Andrew, so here we are. You with me?
Yep, I'm right here.
All right, so here we are with a problem that is our problem. I think that's where it began for you. It was your problem, and then you begin to make the assumption and then talk around to find out that others had the same or a similar problem. And then you discovered that no one else had solved it yet.
No, you know, that's incorrect. Maybe I left a little bit I left something out. So there had been other people and other companies and other technologies that had tried to solve this problem. The problem was in those tools, the ease of use wasn't there. It confused a lot of people. There were certain products that we had purchased over the years internally that, you know, people had abandoned from, you know, the first year of using them because the friction was enormous.
Okay.
And so we went back to our standard spreadsheets and said, I mean, a lot of these tools were overlays of Excel. So at the end of the day, you ended up with Excel.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, most people who are in a transactional environment with a lot of volume, Excel can be the devil because if you hit backspace and you delete a formula, you're screwed. And sometimes you spend more time tinkering with a spreadsheet trying to figure out where something changed in, because essentially you're messing around with code, even though they're mathematical formulas, you're trying to figure out what's wrong. So you always have this lurking feeling in the back of your mind that you screwed something up or that maybe the information that you're sending out is not accurate. On top of that, most people don't understand what you're putting together. And that really compelled me after looking at the people that had tried to solve it and had actually made a sale to somebody and they had purchased these tools, spent the money and abandoned the tools, that sort of reassured my gut feeling that if we built a better, a superb experience that was miles and leagues ahead of what their tools were, that we would be pretty successful with it.
Okay. So now you have the problem and you've got confirmation that it hasn't been solved in the way, or maybe you could solve it more efficiently or effectively. What's next?
Then you actually have to do it.
Well, what does that mean, you have to do it? You've got an idea. You have a plan. So what does that mean? Talk to me a little bit more granularly about what that means.
You know, and that's the funny thing is at the moment you don't know what the next step is. You know, I was talking to one of my friends the other day, and I said, hey, man, so you just had a baby. What's it like? And he's like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm collecting as much information from my friends and parents as I can.
Uh-huh.
But I'm making it, and it's working. So, You know, I thought that was funny. And it's not much different here in the sense that, you know, I hadn't put a software as a service application before. I hadn't put an online. So I had to, you know, ask a lot of people about things that I wasn't educated about. Mm-hmm. So I just asked a lot of questions. And then when I finally sort of wrapped my head around what was needed to, you know, design the blueprint of what we needed to do, played around with experience, stare at wireframes that I was building from scratch, knowing what the tools was and that I really understood the process, then I could start putting together the recipe and actually start putting together the contents of that recipe, mixing the ingredients and see, you know, how they were formulating it in real life and really test these things out, see if it worked, if it tasted good, if it not tasted good and that.
All right. So did you do the programming yourself?
Oh, no. I wouldn't be able to program myself out of, you know, a bind.
All right. So talk to me about back there. At what point did you get beyond your own imagination?
Can you rephrase the question?
Well, all right. So you're sitting there. You've listened to your friends. You've talked to them about ideas. You're taking it in, and presumably you're sitting there in your imagination, imagining the solution. And at some point, you say, I'm ready to go to work. Now, what does that mean? Do you then find out who can program this for you?
You know, the good thing was a lot of the guys who I was talking to educating me. Luckily, because of my real estate experience, I was able to talk to people that either weren't programmers or had access to programmers. So it was easy to say, hey, Andrew, you know, you may want to talk to this gentleman over here. He can build it out and do different things. And then you sort of start seeing, you know, I wanted to make sure that I selected the right programmer.
Mm-hmm.
Because what unfortunately happens is, and somebody had warned me in trying to solve this problem was, hey, the reason those applications don't work and they look like that is because a lot of the times you don't have a product manager managing the product. You've got the engineer driving everything.
Uh-huh.
And there's some very talented – there are a lot of talented engineers who don't have that problem. But unfortunately, in our space, that had happened quite a bit. So I spent some time interviewing programmers once I wrapped my head around this. I had already had the wireframes. I had already, you know, done my due diligence on what my next steps would be. It came down to the point where I had to, you know, sign a contract to get the development work done.
Okay.
But the one thing is I knew I wasn't a technical guy. So I had to have somebody who was a technical person who didn't have the time to do this mm-hmm. to, you know, be able to guide the individuals who had the talent to do it. So I called up one of my buddies, the individual who had come from MySpace, Chris, and I said, hey, you know, can you help me build this? He helped me hire the team. We went ahead and hired the team, and, you know, they started doing all the development work. And then what I would do is I've always been an early riser. Really early in the morning, I would, you know, see the changes and the improvements and what the programmers had done, test things out, mm-hmm. report bugs and things and issues really so we can iterate really quickly. And then we had we released it into, you know, when I felt that the product was – good enough for the brokers and the real estate and the commercial real estate community to start playing around with it and start poking holes at it.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we put it into beta, and we made a few phone calls. Duke Long, who has a phenomenal blog, by the way, in commercial real estate and technology. I'll give him a plug because it's fantastic content.
So what's the address?
It's www.duke.long.com.
Okay.
He was kind enough to put together and we didn't know him back then. Somebody else had reached out to him to do an article. He had done an article on Rakeland, and it, you know, a lot of people started registering and giving us a lot of feedback, which was fantastic.
Uh huh. So I'm getting the sense then that while this is your creation, it really took place in the context of lots of other people.
At the end of the day, I made the decisions. There was some feedback that, you know, the funny thing about feedback is, and I'll tell you this, because I going through this whole building, and, you know, Rakeland's just one of the applications I'm working on. Going through this process, you really start developing a sense of prioritization. when the product and building out a product, because you can either spend a lot of money developing features that one or three people might use out of 10,000. They're really good ideas. The problem is prioritizing whether you want to do those things. So you have to become a little bit dictatorial. Listen to people who are using it, because keep in mind, I'm a domain expert and I'm using the application every day. People who didn't know that I built this application are using it in my office. They'll give you feedback, and you know, because I use it one way, they don't use it the same way. And it really, at the end of the day, is you can't build a perfect product, but you can build a product so powerful that when people need it, they can do what they need to do, get in, get out, and in the future, if there's enough people desiring a certain feature set, etc., then you can go visit that. But you should solve the problems that are today rather than the problems that might happen in the future. And that's really what I learned throughout this process is, as opposed to trying to build something by committee, I took a lot of the information in, digested it, thought about it, and made the decision myself.
Yes.
And that's important. I would say that was some advice that I got from one of my mentors, who, believe it or not, is big on feedback. And what that person had said is, just make sure that you don't get into this mode where you're trying to please everybody, because that becomes the devil when you're building web tools for individuals.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So that whole notion of how we connect with other people. I mean, at one level, you're an entrepreneur, a singular entrepreneur out there. On the other hand, you're connected with lots of people who are giving you direction, motivation, mentoring, feedback, and then ultimately you have a virtual organization that's doing work for you.
Never looked at it that way, but I think you're onto something.
Well, I mean,
don't announce it, because I don't want them to start asking for salaries.
well, no, because you're giving them something back. You're giving them value. It's what I'm seeing, and it's not just with you. I mean, I had a phone call with a fellow in Baltimore today. It was the same thing. He and his friend, his buddy, his partner are doing a particular way of doing card processing sales. I mean, they're selling credit card processing. Well, they're using an affiliate marketing model to do it. And the way that they put that together is they have people all over the world that they're using in their network to help them develop their business plan. Now, that's very different from the way that we've done business the way we did business 10 years ago. I mean, 10 years ago is exactly what you're talking about. What you're fearing is, oh my goodness, they're going to send me a bill for consulting work.
You know, and when we look back though too, you have to see that a lot of those businesses that were around back then that took the venture capital, that built, but didn't really, I mean, they didn't really take the time to, maybe they did take the time to invest in really, you know, testing their ideas, but a lot of those businesses aren't here today. And, you know, that might be an ingredient of what sort of caused that calamity, but you know, we'll never know. But we know that, I know, for example, what you're saying is right, because I've got a lot of friends with very visible startups, with very visible, tools that we use every day, that to this day, they've got a tons of mentors. At the end of the day, they make the decision, but you virtually, not only do you have your company and you've got employees, you've got salaries, you've got board meetings, but you've got, you know, a sounding board of multiple intelligences feeding back to you so that you've got the best information possible to make a decision.
That's right. Now, I want to take a little, use a little bit of imagination here for a moment, because one of the things that I do in training salespeople is to help them to move from what is essentially a vendor status. I mean, if you can imagine, an org chart with the decision maker at the top. It might be at the top of the whole organization as the CEO. Or it might be a department chairman or a VP at the top of his particular organization, correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, when you think about that org chart, the way that decisions come down, execution orders, they come down. And very often, salespeople will come in at that vendor status. And they'll allow themselves to be treated as if they were just one more employee in that vendor train. I mean, that employee train.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so when the decision maker says, go put together a spreadsheet for me and tell me how you're going to help me. Yes, sir. Boom. Gone. Go get me better prices. Okay. Off we go. They're taking orders, execution orders from the decision maker. And what I want them to see is that that there's a whole different world that surrounds that decision maker, that are his trusted advisors.
Right.
They may or may not be part of the organization explicitly. They probably are not getting paid for their comments, their advice. But the decision maker is taking that information in. And the question that I give the salesperson is, where do you want to be? At the underling or the overling? You know, the trusted advisor or at the vendor level? And so that's their decision. That's their mental change, their attitudinal change that allows them to come in at the trusted advisor level. And what I'm seeing is that entrepreneurially, we are creating that trusted advisor world from the very beginning.
Yeah, and that's I think that's profound advice too. I mean, if I knew that when I first started my career in commercial real estate, I think the first few years of my life until I figured that out, it was an expensive lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great that you're out there, and I mean, and people are listening to your radio show, and people are approaching you to provide them with the tools to be able to see this paradigm, because it is a paradigm shift, but it's effective and it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, you have to be able to communicate at the same language level, communicate the same issues. You got to appreciate the kind of conversation that's going on in that decision maker's head, so that you're really advising that decision maker, or at least that decision maker recognizes, believes, perceives that you understand him or her. You're not just there trying to hawk or sell or push a particular product or service.
Well, we're engineers, right? I mean, at the end of the day, everybody's just trying to solve a problem. Whether it's a problem of magnitude, or what should I wear to work today? It doesn't matter how small, but we're consistently engineering solutions no matter what. But if you can engineer solutions for your customers, your prospects, that bring value to the organization at a substantial level, you gain a lot of trust.
Yeah. Now, that's a big shift from let me help you figure out what tie you want to wear. That's a big shift from, oh, I happen to be selling noble ties today that are red with stripes, and you should be wearing this. Very different approach.
Right.
So I agree with you that we're all trying to solve problems, and the people that I'm going to tend to listen to are the people who I believe are on my side, trying to help me solve my problem rather than trying to solve their problem, which is how do they sell me their product or service.
There are people that make you look good.
Yes. Well, that's another piece. That's right. I mean, you get
especially when you're getting dressed, right?
And if you don't make me look good, then I'm not going to listen to you anymore.
Yeah, they make you look good in the boardroom with what you have to say and fashionably.
Now, extending that into the world of business today, where business is being created today, which then I want to extend to even Fortune 500 companies. But right now, just beginning with the entrepreneurial experience that you have, the innovation experience, that begins in a context. You're not alone for very long.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be an island because I come from a marketing background. So the moment that you realize that you can spend a lot of, and we were talking about this very lightly earlier, the moment that you realize that you're trying to solve a very big problem, however, if somebody hasn't solved it before, there's a reason for that. A lot of the times it's because the market is too small. The thing too is sometimes the markets will be small, like a niche, but the dollars are bigger. So you have to kind of discern which one is it? And when you're an entrepreneur and you've learned that lesson in the past, or you're trying to learn that lesson, usually the people who you're talking to and consulting with, really, because that's what you're doing, will sort of guide you to get that vision.
Okay. All right. So as we have those people that we trust that are guiding us, this is the piece that I think is very real, is that it's the context that we are operating in. When we have that whole picture of beginning in a context, and that context is really what's going to guide me in terms of my products and services, that changes the whole relationship. And when you look at a company, as I start to work with some of the companies now, they're, you know, 20, 30, 40, $50 million companies, they thought they had a direction. But as they begin to really listen to their marketplace through social media, they're finding that they got to go back to square one and begin to rethink what they're doing, because their marketplace is not where they thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and that can be fatal too.
Well, we had on the show a couple of weeks ago, we had Ron Burr from WebVisible. If you go back and listen to his conversation, what he said very clearly is they were in a great spot because they were not doing as well as they should be. And their competitors were doing very well, which meant that their competitors kept going down a path that was going to ultimately lead them into a blind alley. But WebVisible could stop and say, we're rethinking it. We're listening to our marketplace. It's going in a different direction. Because we're not making as much money as we want to be, we can afford to make that change. And the others couldn't.
Right. Sometimes they've got more agility, especially when they're smaller.
Yeah. Well, or when they're on the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that whole notion of being in the context, the social media now, the communication tools that we have, give us that context if we want to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I think it's a great asset. I mean, but the biggest thing, too, is it gives it to you in real time.
Oh, absolutely. That's right. That's right. And that's why I'm so interested in the kind of processes that you were going through, that Jason Dumas was going through this morning when we're talking to him. All of these, and it's in real time that these changes take place.
Well, the way that I see it, so for example, one of the biggest things is when I was building Rateland for, and the funny thing, which took me, and here's a new context, by the way, my competitors approaching me under a different sense. They were asking me about things, and they were consulting with me about how they can better solve these problems that were slowing them down. And they were really embracing Rateland and coming to me and really giving me feedback, saying, hey, I know that you do deals this way, I do deals this way. And then I really got an opportunity to talk to the people who they work with behind the scenes. And then I would see a whole different set of problems. That's the best opportunity to have, where you actually turn to a competitor or to somebody that you do business with, and they look to you to solve problems. And that's what the entrepreneurial spirit does, is what we do is we're designed to solve these problems. And the people who design the problems in a quick, easy, and powerful way win. And that's why when you go to Rateland, the new website's going to be up in about 2 or 3 weeks. But you're going to be able to see that our slogan for that application is quick, easy, powerful, because that's what we want.
So what would you – how would people get in touch with you, or how would they find Rateland? What should they be doing?
So Rateland's really easy. Just go to www.rateblend.com. If you want to get in touch with me, you can follow me on Twitter. It's Andrew Bermudez. Or you can find me on LinkedIn as well, or you can just shoot me an email. My email is really easy. It's my first name, Andrew@Bermudez.com.
Super. Andrew, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's very interesting to be talking with entrepreneurs in real time, creating their product and service, and seeing how that context that we all live in right now, that's so powerfully connected through social media and all the communication tools that we have, how it's affecting where we're going and how fast we can get there. So thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Enjoyed it tremendously.
Take care. And so there you have it. You know, up and down the 405, there are folks who are taking a look at problems that exist today in real time, and they are seeking out solutions. And that's the future, is finding the problem and not seeing it as a problem but as an opportunity, and then beginning to live in the context. It's already there. We don't even have to create it. All we have to do is be aware of it and start communicating with it, find the context that that problem is going to be valuable to, communicate with them, and then begin to create that plan of execution to solve that problem and make it real. We saw it last week on Boxador, and we're hearing about it today with Andrew Bermudez of Rateland. So from the Pilgrim on the 405, make it a great week. Find some of those problems, turn them into opportunities, and take solutions.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405, the only show that takes you out into the frontiers of new technologies, only on OCTalkRadio.net.